flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good afternoon, St. Louis. DGS on KMOX. Happy Tuesday to you. Pretty good Tuesday for me. Three reasons. One, the weather, right? I mean, just so nice. We just went for a walk. It was beautiful. Secondly, last night I, for real, went upstairs to bed at 7:16 p.m.
Whoa.
Like a small child, and got up at 6:45 a.m. So I'm feeling a little bit better than usual. And then third, I have effectively procrastinated a few things in my life this week without getting bit in the butt, and that feels good.
That's nice, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, when you're getting away with things, it's always good.
Right.
Do you think
yeah.
you're able to go to bed earlier because of the confluence of the early sunset and the fact that you only use candles?
Bam.
Dude.
So it's just and very sleepy in your house.
I 100% fooled myself. No, I didn't fool myself. I allowed myself to fool myself.
All right.
So what I did was I said, I'm not going to bed. I'm just going to go upstairs and lay down.
Yeah.
And to effectuate that, I left the television going downstairs, which I never do when I go to bed. And that allowed me the facade, that the farce that I was just going upstairs to lay down for
so
half
no
an
pressure.
Hour. No pressure. Yeah. And then I woke up at 1. I'm like, oh, I guess I'm going to bed. And so, yeah.
Nice.
You know, I think I've tried that going to bed early thing, and then I wake up at 1. Like,
yeah,
my body's like, what do you think?
It can go bad.
What do you think you're doing?
You think you're pulling a scam here,
yeah,
buddy?
It
think,
can
come
go
on,
bad.
Man.
Yeah, that's why I was
this.
Shocked. I woke up, and there seemed to be some light. I never sleep all the way through the night, and I didn't last night. But I woke up, and I was like, oh, I bet it's 5. And I looked, and it was 6:30. I'm like, oh, hey, rock
hey
on.
Hey there, buddy.
Yeah, wow. Rock on.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No, you're right. Like, I was thinking to myself, at 7:16 in the summer, it's still blazing hot.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no going to bed. But you know what? My mom used to put me to bed as a toddler or even like an older toddler when the sun was still up. Like, that's something that like my family told me about. So maybe it's somehow ingrained in me. Who knows?
But I can see, though, in the summer when it doesn't set until 9.
Yeah.
Are you keeping a baby up until 9?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess that's a good point. Maybe my mom wasn't so terrible. Speaking of parents, today's my dad's 98th birthday.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow.
Yeah, right? Weird.
Yeah.
He was only 76 when he passed away.
That's young.
He's so young.
Did it?
Yeah.
Was it of his generation? Did he seem older than that? Like, if
yes.
you compare it to now,
oh,
it'd be 100%. More like 85 or whatever?
Completely.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in World War II at 17. He worked around asbestos.
Ugh.
He worked around, they used to put out buckets of benzene and they would use it to wash their rubber gloves. So, whoa. and that he worked hard every day of his life. He wasn't a big, strong guy. And then when he retired at 62, he sat down. It was just like done. You know what I mean? So, yeah, he was definitely a child of his generation.
Right.
100%.
I mean, that is exactly what that generation was like.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
You wear it.
You go into the military. You put in your 40 years of work. You retire. You get maybe 5 good years. And
you have the benefits.
Yes.
Right? You have a pension. You have all that stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Would you bring that? Would you trade what we have today
for what we had in the 50s, 60s, 70s when it comes to that, taking care of workers?
I mean, the stability was a lot better in that way. We just talked about it the other day. I don't know if you guys heard, but like only 1% of people that stay in a job 3 years get a promotion, and which is why everybody job hops. And the reason you job hop is, what's the incentive to stay? So there's no pension that you're working towards.
Right.
Right. So what's your incentive to stay anywhere for 10 years or 20 years if you're not going to get promotions? It's a totally different dynamic. It's much more chop and go.
Yeah.
And two, that definitely varies company by company, because there are some companies that tease you and string you along saying, oh, you're going to get promoted, and it takes a while. And then the worker realizes, I'm never going to get promoted, which is the point, because as a more senior employee, then you leave and they get to bring in a younger, cheaper employee.
Cheaper person, yeah.
That is a format for some businesses. There are other businesses that do treat their employees way better and grant them flexibility as well as promotions.
Yeah.
So it really is company to company.
But the uniform expectation in the time Dave's talking about was, you're going to come to a job, you can stay there for 20, 30, 40 years.
It wasn't unusual.
And even if you don't work your way up super high, you'll still get raises on a regular basis, and you have a pension that you're working towards, so that when you get your 25 years in, boom, retired, I got a pension, I'm covered.
Yeah. Sounds pretty nice.
And that's the way that was the norm. That was the expectation.
And maybe there was less opportunity for reaching the high end, which few people ever get to. I mean, the reality is almost nobody you know is ever going to get to that point.
Right.
Right. So but we kind of fool ourselves into thinking, well, if I just keep working hard, maybe one of these days that's going to happen for me. I don't know if that's better than more people being taken care of throughout their entire work life, and then when they get done, you know, having a pension or something they can count on that's not a 401k that fluctuates like crazy, and one day it's worth a lot of money, and the next day something happens and you've got nothing.
It seems like we've gone more toward risk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like high risk, but also high reward, right? If you're in the right time in the market and you got a big 401k and you're about to retire and it goes on a run, you're like, woo!
That's great for very few people.
It can't, yeah. I mean, over time, the market always goes up. But in a given moment, like let's say it goes into a downturn 6 months before you're going to retire, you may not be able to retire. You might have to put it off and go through. That's a little bit more of a risk than having a pension sitting there where you're like, I'm good, I'm covered, I can still retire. And, you know, if you had investments, you can still watch that. And there are more ways now to get famous, to do something cool, to go on, be an influencer, or maybe start your own job on the side, or start your own business. Like, those things seem to be more possible and prevalent than they used to be. But they're also, again, there's reward, but there's high risk.
Still pretty rare.
Yeah.
I still think we have too many influencers, but it's still pretty rare.
And pensions are like, too. I mean, that's state to state, right? It's where you live. It's what industry you're in, what field. So some pensions are insane. I mean, Illinois spends a lot on pensions. I mean, they have a lot of, they've had to scale it back because the benefits were a little bit too expensive. And I guess you were probably,
there used to be pensions with private companies.
Right, that's just the state ones. I mean, we're talking about, like, if you worked for I don't know,
Boeing.
Yeah, Boeing, gotcha. Or you worked for Xerox, whatever. If you were there,
Xerox.
Right, if you worked
Xerox.
For like
Xerox.
If you worked for any one of those big companies.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
I can't believe your brain went to Xerox.
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to think of a company.
About Xerox. I would have died and never once, like, lived my whole life and died and never thought about
Xerox
again. Can
you Xerox this for me?
How old are you, Grandpa?
I mean, it was the 90s and 2000s. It's not that long ago.
It was the 90s.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, private companies used to have it. That's almost.
Do you think that
unheard of
college has become an impediment to life?
Boy,
given the cost and the almost, it's now the equivalent of having a high school diploma. That if you don't have it, you better be a millionaire influencer because you're not going to get a great job. But it's zero guarantee coming out of college with a 4-year degree that you're going to get a great job.
Well, it depends, right? Like, what do you define as a great job? If you're looking at a job that pays well, that comes with good benefits, there's plenty of that in the trades.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and I mean, medical, like, sales. You don't need a degree for that. And
right.
You can make
sales,
a
right.
ton of money in medical
but
sales.
It's like with
it depends on what you want to do, right? If, I mean, if you're trying to be an architect, you gotta go to college.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't have any choice. Right. So it depends on what you're trying to do.
Phoebe's only 19, but, and she's very 19. And she's doing it. She's going to school. She's trying hard. She'll get her degree, but she's not thinking like we would think, the same way I didn't think when I was 19.
Right.
Like when she had the guts to tell her mom and I, I'm really not that concerned with academics. I'm looking for the best 4-year experience I can get. I'm like, oh, rock on. But one thing I'm super proud of is we're paying for her education. She'll graduate with no debt, which is something I wasn't able to do, which would have been fantastic. And she won't appreciate it now, but maybe, you know.
Oh, later she will.
Later on she will.
Oh, definitely.
When she watches all of her friends with student loan payments in their 20s and 30s, and like, I can't take that trip to Cancun. I got my student loans, man. Yep. I mean, like, you know, that's a big deal. She'll recognize that later.
It is too expensive. College is too expensive.
Yeah, it's silliness.
I mean, and we need people to go to college. We need people to do trades. We need people to go to 2-year schools.
But you know
we
what,
need
though?
Everything. But
it's become such a glamour thing. Like, I graduated from SIUE, and it's still pretty inexpensive. It's a 4-year degree. You can get a 4-year degree. You can get a PhD from SIUE.
Right.
But it's not as cool as going to KU or Colorado or something like that. Which I get when you're that age. Of course I get it.
Yeah, I mean,
when you're my age, you're like,
I wanted to go to Miami.
Right there.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot to it that goes beyond. It was more than just the beautiful campus and the weather. I mean, like, there were specific things I cared about, like playing for a baseball team that was like that. But it was still probably not the most practical choice. But when you're 18, 19, that's not necessarily where your mind is. And that's a different, to me, that one's different because that's a private school. Where I have the biggest issue is public schools, state schools that have gotten insanely
like
expensive.
Like Indiana costing $74,000,
yeah. What is? It's a nuts. State school. What are you doing?
I was so relieved when Phoebe didn't pick Indiana.
Now, I'm sure it's a lot cheaper.
Loved it. We all loved it.
That's the out-of-state, though. Like, I'm sure the in-state is quite a bit cheaper.
But you can't get in-state until you're 22.
Right.
So they got you by the short hairs.
And yeah, I mean, and also I think for a lot of parents, it's, you know, where their kid goes to school is important to them. And there's a lot of projection. A lot of parents also, you know, it's not, you know, you may say for Phoebe, she just wanted a good experience, wasn't so much the education. There's a lot of parents who it's the education, but really it's who you meet. Because, yes, you can get a great 4-year degree and then go to law school and be a successful person going to Mizzou. If it's really important to you, though, that your kid goes to Harvard or Princeton because of who they're going to meet there, parents will bend over backwards. I mean, there's a reason why the same play, like this, when I talk about just how influential the Ivy League schools are, because it's like all of the Supreme Court justices, right, go to Harvard or Yale, except for Amy Coney Barrett, who went to Notre Dame. But Ketanji Brown Jackson, Matt Damon and Mo Rocca of CBS News were all in the same play at Harvard. I mean, it's who you know when you go to those schools. So a lot of times for parents, it is like a reflection of them, and they want their kids to go to a hoity-toity school.
And you know, it's something we see in our show prep now all the time, but it's my life that there are, I would say, a majority of parents my age who have college kids now are also in it for the party. I mean, like, we're gonna go see Phoebe in a couple of weeks. We'll drive up Saturday morning. We'll take her to lunch. We'll take her to Target, and we'll come home. There's so many parents who like buy condos, and they go and they stay and
party
they
for
party.
Football games.
Yes.
They're doing shots in the parking lot before their kids' games.
100%.
I mean, it's insane.
Sounds fun.
It's not crazy.
Like that's your deal.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. Now it's beyond. You know,
it's not my deal.
The influence part, Amy, is a really good point, and it's not just Ivy's. Although for what you're talking about, it is. Yeah. But like as an example, if you're a broadcaster. If you go to Syracuse,
you
meet a lot of people.
Your inroad to ESPN is much greater because everybody there went to Syracuse.
And you're very close to...
And your proximity is very close.
Right.
And I personally think that because I went to the school I did, I got breaks early in my career in this radio in the radio business on the sports side that I might not have gotten had I gone and had the exact same degree with the exact same experiences playing college baseball at a different place that wasn't as reputable. I do think those things can matter, but it doesn't always, and it doesn't always work. You know, it's still probably, what would you say, Ron, still a 10% chance that you're going to, quote, get your dream job or get that call that matters that much. But I do think that certain places for certain things, certain programs, if you want to be a journalist, Mizzou J-School is pretty much Northwestern.
Yeah,
I mean, like, you're good. You're going to have connections. You're going to have a reputation. You're going to have an advantage over someone with the same degree who goes to Georgia.
You know what my WashU law school degree has done for me? And I'm not kidding. I'm so weird. You guys know this. But I went to WashU Law. And when people find that out, they give me the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Like, if I didn't have that, they just go, I don't know. He seems like quite a floater to me.
That's a great point.
Lazy and kind of a slacker. Then they're like, but, I mean, he made it through WashU Law.
That's a good way to put it, is in a lot of those ways, it may be a tiebreaker. It may be the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, yeah.
It's a good way to put it.
Or maybe they stopped supporting WashU Law.
Maybe so.
That school's not what I thought it was.
Pity the next guy that comes through.
Like, dang.
I was top 10 at WashU. They're like, yeah, we've had one of those.
They let him in?
Honey.
Wow.
It really did knock the hell. It knocked the hell out of WashU for me.
No.
Like, when they let me in, I swear to God, I still have my acceptance letter. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. You guys are not what I thought. It's like someone dating you and you're like, you're not that great.
I know.
If you're dating me, speaking of dating, you know, my new girlfriend, the new Rubicon.
Yeah.
Who's comparing not great with the old Rubicon. Because, you know, like, you don't know what you got until they're walking out the door. And but my new one is very preachy. When you turn it on, first of all, there's a television in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you guys have seen this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a television in my car.
Yeah, mine too, yeah.
And so when I turn it on, it tries to make me accept the rules of the road.
Yeah.
You have this too?
Oh, yeah.
You have this too?
Beeping, you're just like, okay.
Like,
yeah, mine'll get the button now.
Yeah,
here,
mine'll get
then.
The, hey, by the way, could be icy conditions.
Don't get all high and mighty on me. You know what my old Rubicon requested me? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
What did it
Such
give you, though?
That's a great way to put it.
Oh, I could drive it anywhere.
Wasn't overly critical.
No, but it didn't give you any information either, though.
No.
We didn't need it.
Didn't need it.
There are
I would
signs.
Rather be ignorant and not preach to.
Dude, right.
I was in a car. I was in an Audi once. I don't drive an Audi, but I was driving one.
I was in an Audi once.
I was in an Innie
once. I was driving it for I had it for, I think, like a week or something, and I'm driving this thing, and I realized.
This was a girl thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, no. I realized I'm on the interstate, and I would, you know, set the speed limit to whatever I would set it to on the cruise control, and it kept slowing down. I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I realized that it knows what the speed limit is, and it slows down to get you under the speed limit.
Gross.
I thought, I don't want that.
Then just turn off the cruise control.
Gross is a good word.
Well, I turned it. You can. There's a setting you
disable
go to it and turn it off.
Yeah.
That was
obnoxious.
And
I was mad that my Outback won't let me set the cruise control over 90.
There are times, too, if you have, like, the lane assist stuff, where it'll tell you if you're, like, just kind of drifting across the line. But sometimes it'll beep at you. It doesn't change the steering wheel, although I think that's a possibility too.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, that car
it can do it. Yeah.
Yep.
But like it'll beep at you even if you're like changing lanes on purpose.
Yeah.
But not signaling because there's nobody around you. It still yells at you and you're
judging
like, "Nope,
cars,
turning that one off."
Yeah, don't judge me.
No, I just turn it off.
126 DGS. Did you guys see that the CEO of NVIDIA lost $18 billion yesterday? Personal money.
Good.
Oh, no. Good. Wow.
Eat it.
Ouch.
Well, I mean, how many people are you taking advantage of to do that stuff?
NVIDIA? Well, I think they were just investing in NVIDIA.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not like
I mean, other, no, I'm just saying, like, people lose their stuff all the time. I'm not going to feel bad for that guy.
Well, he's probably only got about $100 billion left.
I know. I mean, so I'm saying, I mean, whatever, dude. I mean, like, some people lose $20,000. That's going to ruin them for a year at least.
I don't know what it was in the last, you know, 30 minutes, but as of like an hour ago, they rebounded today from everything they lost yesterday. Not all of it.
Would have been a good day to invest in it, just short term at least.
This whole thing, and we need to explore it more when we get somebody who knows what they're talking about, but the Chinese company that started all of this, that DeepSeek, that they say they can do the same thing, maybe better, with less energy spent and less money. And everybody's just like, oh, wow, look at this, without
just
thinking critically.
It, right.
Like, are
Take their word
sure?
for it.
Are we sure this company can do the same thing for $6 million with an M that all these companies spend billions with a B can do for less energy? Are we sure about
this?
It sure worked yesterday.
That's the question, because that was 100% the question that was reviled at the time, but ultimately led to the Lance Armstrong reveal, because it was one reporter. He said no one had asked, like, no one comes back from cancer that much stronger. You just don't. You don't fight the fight that he fought and come back so much better. And he said it was that question, like when Ron said, like, really? You're doing it for millions? He said, just knowing the disease, his question was, really? This guy came back from that deep of a fight with cancer that much stronger? And that's, and he, I mean, almost lost his job. People thought he was committing blasphemy. And look what they found out about the ultimate cheater.
But just, and it really puts into perspective how stupid and volatile the stock market is, that all these people bought it and they got it. Just what are we doing around here, man?
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
135 DGS on KMOX.
I get why companies do this, but it pisses me off. I signed up for Cook Unity, the meals that are delivered to your house, and they weren't good. And so I was going to cancel it, and I couldn't figure out how to do it because I'm not very smart and I'm 60. And so my friend Rachel helped me do it. And then it took how many clicks? Five or six saying no.
Are you sure?
Are you sure? Are you sure? And then they offered me 30% off, and I said no. And then the CEO emailed me.
Oh, that's nice.
And offered me 40%. I'm like, where were you?
Just for you,
yesterday.
Dave. Yeah.
Why couldn't you just give it to me at a lower price? Spectrums like that.
Oh, yeah. We've done that forever on the, whether it's DirecTV when we used to have that or on those services. Like, yeah, we're just going to call and cancel. And they're like, oh, can we entice you with a discount?
Newspapers do it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Washington Post, Times. I don't know if the Post-Dispatch here does.
Didn't
it,
they make a law recently? Maybe it didn't go into effect yet.
I don't think it did.
That it has to be as easy to cancel the service as it is to start it.
That's Biden was trying to get that done. I'm not sure if he did or not, but
I think he did.
Yeah, maybe
I'm
he did.
I'm pretty sure he passed it.
It is obnoxious though that they make you jump through so many hoops, and sometimes they the option is like they make it confusing where you think that you're clicking no to renewing or whatever. But really, you're not. You know what I'm saying? Like, the button looks weird. It's like a link instead of a button. And then you click it and go, oh, damn it. That's not what I tried to do.
I just signed up again.
Yes.
Just committed for life.
I have a question. Any of you guys West Wing fans?
The
television show?
Never really watched it.
I watched it back in the day.
So that was from the mid-90s, probably. Something like that.
Yeah.
I was watching an episode recently. They were dealing with the same crap we're dealing with now. And it really makes you think, like, have we done anything? Like, it was Israel and it was Taiwan and China and it was this and that. And I mean, I understand you're always going to have foes, you're always going to have economies, but like, it was the same damn stuff. What do you think we have progressed on? What do you think that we have had some gains and won on? Like, well, at least we're not dealing with this anymore. Can you think of anything?
Nope. I mean, not really. Anything massive?
Well, but I mean, also, it depends on how you look at it, because some of it, you solve a question, but especially when it comes to our foreign policy, it's managing, right? It's like, okay, how do we
stop? It's not solving.
It's not solving. It's kind of managing an issue and keeping people or, you know, geopolitical adversaries from taking more aggressive steps.
And also kind of following that, we had a game-changing event with 9/11, and then we had a response that needed to happen, but then we also screwed up part of that and did something we probably shouldn't have done. And that kind of also took you off mission for the other thing. And that led to a whole spiral of other things that wound up leading to this problem and that problem and how many billions and billions and billions of dollars got spent, not even on the justified action that was absolutely necessary, but on the mistake.
And there's always, so I think, like I said, even talking about foreign policy, it's going to be a lot of whack-a-mole because there will always be bad actors, and certain ones you can pretty much count on, like Russia, like China, right? I mean, they're just fundamentally different approaches, different worldviews to either, you know, what you'd call Western civilization, you know, Western countries like Europe and the United States. So some of it, the reality is whack-a-mole. World peace sounds great. Not having Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin sounds great, but you know, you have to deal with them.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yep.
DGS rabbit hole time. Are we equal?
All of us in here?
No. Everybody. People.
To each other?
Listen, are we equal? However you want to handle it.
Well, you got to define equal first, right? Like,
you define it.
I don't know how I would define it.
I'd say this. Every human being has the same inherent value, and then their actions determine whether they lose that privilege.
Wow.
Oh.
Well, next segment.
I didn't mean like who can we sacrifice? I just
no, I'm just saying like we all should in my mind, we all start off in the same place. I don't think there's anything higher. I don't think you can be special compared to everyone else in terms of your rights, the way you should be treated, the way that you should be allowed to live your life. But you can sacrifice that by trying to dominate others, by trying to do harm to others or doing harm to others. I mean, it's similar to how you would view in the law, right? In the law, we're all viewed as the same. The law should apply as to all of us. But if I kill someone, I go to jail.
But those
I lose that privilege.
Those actions of like trampling over other people or whatever can often put you in a position to have more money, to have more status, to have more power. In which case is that how you define equal? Do you find it as are we equal in terms of like you know, what we have access to, what our opportunities are, because that stuff can very, very much be defined by how much money you have specifically.
Yeah, practically speaking, I would say then if we're going that way, then not really, because right. A lot of it's where you're born, who you're born to.
So inherent value in a human
right.
is equal. Your status under the law, at least in America,
should be.
Is equal, but physically, mentally, emotionally, everyone is different, and you may not have been born with a resume that equals financial success.
Yeah, or whatever you want to define as success, right?
Yeah, exactly. I want to be a great athlete. I want to be a great musician, but you just weren't. God left out and you can't put in kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you're born in North Korea, good luck. You know, I mean, you didn't do anything to be, you know, to be put in that position, but you're in that position.
What percent, you know, like the one percenters, what percent do you think we're in this room of humans who have lived?
1%.
Oh, yeah. Of all time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Life was tough.
Yeah.
For a long time.
The longest time.
Forever.
Like
life
millions
was literally,
and millions and millions of years.
I think when
my
grandma was born and they didn't have electricity and plumbing, she had more in common probably with how Jesus lived. I mean, seriously, than now. I mean, they had extreme poverty in rural Kentucky. And that is not like how we live today.
Yeah.
So life was very, very tough. I think even with American poverty, which is horrendous, it's so awful to be struggling with poverty. It is not the poverty that you see in India or in some nations in Africa. And so, like, I would say even most Americans are in the 1%. I mean, maybe all Americans of freedom, availability, some type of shelter or some type of food, because life was brutal. I mean, that's why, Kevin, you always talk about the death rates. They had 12 kids because half of them died.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's just measuring what we can think of, you know, but what about at the beginning, or even before what we would call civilization? Like, before there were societies, it was just, man, that had to suck.
Like the free-for-all?
Yeah, just like, you know, where he's a nomad, just wandering around.
At best, you're in
people
a tribe
just trying
of
to,
20
right,
people.
Yeah, people just trying to kill, you know, you're fighting over resources, literally fighting over resources. Like, the world, it was a much more brutal existence. And, I mean, wouldn't you guys, what should we say, the last 100 years, 150 years, compared to the previous 5,000, 10,000?
That's fair.
I mean, we're definitely in the 1% of all of that. I mean, the numbers are just astonishing for the number of years. When was it that we would even say that humans were civilized, where you had schools and hospitals and things like that?
And seat warmers.
Well, Jonah Goldberg, I forgot. I think he uses a bigger measurement of time, like 10,000 years. But he's like, you could have going back forever aliens stopping by Earth every 500 years. It'd pretty much look the same.
Same, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, what in the world?
What happened?
What happened?
So what happened?
The aliens. Just kidding.
Was it technology?
Well, I mean, in the book with Jonah Goldberg, it does go back to the beginning of kind of this rights of the individual and the Enlightenment and this ability to push back against the divine right of kings, which allowed more individual freedom, which allowed more intellectual freedom, which allowed more social mobility.
And when was that?
You could go back to the late 17th century, early 18th century, where you start.
Well, it was before that, though, right?
Out.
When was the Magna Carta signed?
Well, that was 1200, but
I mean, that's like the first time humans were given rights.
True, but going past like the divine, it didn't really get radical.
Yeah,
and it got rapidly radical in the 17th and 18th centuries.
Could also, like, I would say that a lot of the process, because that's all true. Like, that's the mechanics of it.
Of the Industrial Revolution.
We also, it's just the way our brains are. We started solving problems. And every time you solved a problem, you saw that there were more problems, and then the minds turned to solving those problems. And, you know, whether it's you know, it all starts with basic understanding of math.
How much
that allows your understandings of science to be more advanced.
It had to do with rewarding people for individual efforts, as opposed to just, you're my serf, you're my slave, you're going to go tend the South 40 just like I told you to, as opposed to, oh, you invented the cotton gin. Wow, here's a whole bunch of money. You're now in a different, you know. Seems like that's made a huge difference in the past 200 years.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all of it, because when you think of the Enlightenment and you think of the Enlightenment thinkers in Europe and then how they were able to influence the founding fathers over in America, and it all, you had this political revolution on top of this intellectual revolution. And then those countries, Western civilization, took off with a lot of developments, both socially, culturally, technology, all of that. And so it's all tied together, right, with not just the incentive to figure out, push, and work on your own, but also the ability, the freedom to do that.
Which some countries still don't have.
Right. Yeah.
And they're still really lagging behind.
Right.
How much of it, I'm always fascinated by trying to figure out how much of the changes that you're talking about, which clearly exist and clearly happened, how much of it was motivated in part because at times in the past, the people in positions of power pushed it too far, and the regular people like, well, I got nothing left to lose, so we're going to just come kill you. Like, we're going to rise up in numbers, the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution. Like, you push a population to a certain point, which is the point where they don't have food, where they can't feed their families, when you're in that desperate pot. And for however long it was, that probably just eventually got out of control, where, you know, at some point you realize it's better to give in, and it's better, like, if you're the King of England, is it better to have people coming for you all the time, or is it better to give people more?
Well, but a lot of violent revolutions, too, you know, the same with conquering, right? If you replace one violent, oppressive regime with another, getting anywhere.
Yeah.
Part of what made the American Revolution, right, so different than the French Revolution is they weren't just chopping off the heads of the aristocracy. Like, there had to be some point to change it, not just power for its own
end. Right, not just retribution.
Yeah, and it was unique because we were able to do that across an ocean. It's a lot harder to do what we did here if you're doing it down the street.
True, true. When I be saying to you, don't let this 152 DGS on KMOX. Thanks for listening. Thanks for podcasting. Thanks for everything that you guys do for us. Much appreciated. Megan had a guest on yesterday, kind of a fruity dude. He's an Illinois representative, I believe, and he has introduced a bill so that 18-year-olds can drink alcohol when they're at a restaurant with their parents, and that they can also gamble younger than that when they want. And it was such an interesting interview. And the guy, you'll just have to listen to it yourself if you want to go back and podcast it. But she asked him, well, where did you get this idea? And he goes, just for my brain. I was 13 when I started drinking, and it's been fine for me. And she goes, well, what about all the studies that show that it's really bad for people under 25 because of their brain hasn't gelled yet? And he's like, do you have any concern about that? He's like, none whatsoever. In Europe, they drink like fishes from the time they're, you know, little. It just, what do you think of that? Like, I understand the argument to demystify alcohol, and I guess I've never lived in Italy or Spain or anything, but I guess it's sort of like that in Europe. That would be a good thing so that you don't go to college and hurt yourself or, you know, develop an alcohol problem because you're just drinking your face off and binge drinking. But I don't know. Maybe I just didn't like the guy, so I didn't like the message. But how does that hit you? Codifying it in law.
Yeah, I guess I'm confused as to why he even care, or why he would even make the push to do it. Like, I know he said he just thought of it, but
it's literally what he said.
It doesn't seem
like, you know, I was thinking about this the other day.
Like, people in Congress, was he a state legislator?
Yes.
Or a, okay.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know why that would be on your to-do list.
Thank you.
I don't know.
Also the fact that it's drinking and gambling.
Yes.
Because maybe if it were just drinking, he's like you said, we need to demystify at 18, a controlled environment with your parents. Drinking and gambling feels a little random.
If you want to do that, there's nothing stopping you from, you know, you got an 18-year-old in your house and you have dinner, like, let them have a glass of wine.
Right.
No one's stopping you. Go ahead.
The real point he made was, if you're old enough to die for your country, you're old enough to drink and gamble.
Which, that argument I get, because if you are adult enough to take a bullet for the country, you know, maybe you should be allowed to have some vices.
Should we say, though, that some of the skills in the military maybe would set you up better so you can only drink and gamble if you're in the military? I mean, just based on that reasoning, I don't, you know, I'm being somewhat facetious. It does feel a little random with the drinking.
That's what it feels random. It's like, okay, I don't know why we're
big problem that we're not drinking early enough.
I know.
No. Right.
Especially nowadays. I mean, some parents are providing for kids and they're just like, all right, have at it. So, and I'm not a big fan of gambling anyway, so I would definitely not want to encourage that because studies have shown that with gambling, young people like 18 to 25 and even younger because they're able to gamble, not legally, are 5 times as likely as an adult to develop a gambling addiction. And of all the addictions, gambling addictions have the highest rate of suicide. 20%
I didn't know that.
Of those with gambling addictions have suicidal actions. And so I think you could make a stronger argument against the gambling at a young age and say, we already know you are. The statistics show at least three times more likely to have an addiction at the age of 18. And I don't know what the pros of gambling at 18 are.
Yeah, good point.